Hello.
Yellow. Get the thingy. Here we go. Okay.
By the way, you did not respond to my message about me coming to your area. Everybody else did except you.
Yeah.
Everybody else. Emily has not either, but yeah, you did not, which
you are correct, because I got it while I was out, and I meant to, once I got home and had my calendar in front of me, block off the time and then respond to you. But then by the time I got home, I completely forgot.
Of course.
But it's far enough out, and it's an important enough event.
I figured. I already booked a hotel near where you live. Okay?
I was going to respond on the Slack that I was shocked that there was any hotel establishment closer than Seattle that would meet your standards.
I mean, it's not great, but there's a Delta Hotel and like a courtyard. I mean, the courtyard actually looked horrible, but I went and there is this relatively new Delta Hotel that those hotels get decent reviews. It doesn't look too bad.
Okay. Yes. Anyway, yes, it'll be good to see you here. We'll do a thing.
Yeah. So I don't know. I am not convinced that my wife will come out that day simply because of the jet lag, because I know her. So
right. All good.
I mean, I know that I will be, I'll arrive and do something, but I know my people. And I know last time I went to Seattle, the first thing she did when she got to the hotel was like climb into bed and
go to sleep.
Not leave for many hours. Yes, basically, yeah.
Yes. So. Now, are you actually flying into Everett?
No, we're flying to Seattle.
Oh, man, it's a cute
little
airport.
There aren't that many, there aren't very many flights to there.
No, I know. To go almost anywhere, you have to, do multiple stops on the way.
There's no flights.
You usually have to make multiple stops and pay more. But it's a nice little airport. Anyway, shall we go?
Yes.
Okay. Here goes. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Saturday, February 28th, 2026. It's just after 18 UTC as we're getting started. I am Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
I heard a beep.
Beep. It's been a long time since you've actually heard them. It's not like they've stopped.
But I just heard it again. I just, all of a sudden, just as you finished, all I heard is beep.
You don't have
a fucking day job right now. You're changing damn fucking battery. Time of the day.
I have added to my probabilistic to-do list as a once a week priority one task, which means it'll probably actually come up on the agenda once every couple of months, to identify and remove one beep from the house somewhere.
Okay.
Now, I believe at the moment there are two beeps going on in the house.
Oh, fuck, wait.
I think one of them is a smoke alarm, and the other might be related to our alarm system. But I'm not actually sure, but I have noticed.
I will be clear that if beeps had been going on that long, they weren't fixed, at some point I would find a baseball bat or something and just beat whatever was doing it into submission for it to shut up.
You know,
that would be the solution. Here's the other thing. Look, my, yes. but it's not even me. Look, my wife has made me wake up from bed in the middle of the night because one of those has started. And basically it's been, you got to stop that right now. And my it's not like even like, yes, like yes. option. It's not like I could like, I'll be fine.
I imagine by the time I even notice there is a beep, it's probably already been going for months. And then when I notice it, it's like I'm going up the stairs or something, and I'll notice there's a beep while I'm going up the stairs. I'm like, oh, there must be a smoke detector somewhere near here. Like someday I'll look at that. And then I won't notice when I'm in other parts of the house. So I have to be like walking by it when it makes the beep. And like, unless at that very moment I'm in like, hey, I'm going to take care of beeps mode, then I'm not, you know, I'll file it away as, oh, there's a beep. And, you know,
it's a very interesting mode. I'm going to take care of beeps mode. Interesting. I'm going to take care of beeps.
Right. And like I said, I just added it to my list, and once every few months, it'll probably come up, and I'm sure there'll always be a beep somewhere in the house to find out. The other day, a task came up that I'd added to change. I had noticed we've got like on the back porch, there's like two lights, you know. Uh-huh. And one of the bulbs had gone out. So I added to my to-do list to change that light bulb that had gone out. And several months later, when it came up and I went out to the back, I went to unscrew the bulb and I just touched it and it came back on. So I'm like, oh, it just needed to be screwed back in. And I was disappointed because I didn't actually get to change a light bulb. Now, there are other light bulbs out that I know about, but they haven't come up on my list yet.
Look, if I go up to a light bulb and I manage to like fix it without changing the light bulb, I don't get disappointed.
No, I was really excited because it was one of these old fluorescent curly Q type of bulbs. And I was going to replace it with
the
an
old
LED
curly
bulb.
Ones. Yeah.
You know, but
the
it
old
turned
curly
back
ones,
on.
Yeah.
It turned back on when I tightened it. So I'm like, oh, well, it gets to stay there another few years, maybe.
We had, years ago, we did some remodeling, not planned. It was, we had this issue where we had this flood.
Okay.
And because we had to do a whole bunch of construction, the guy that came in to do the work said, hey, you want me to switch out all the hi-hats with LED lights? It's like, oh, that's, yeah, what the hell? You know, we're in the middle of it. What the hell? Do it. Okay. And that was when they were more expensive at that time. Because I think each fixture was like $50, $60 each.
Now they're the norm.
Now they're, you know.
Now if you don't want LED, you have to go out of your way to get something else.
Right. But the one thing that happened with those LEDs that were original, a lot of those failed.
Yes.
They were a brand that,
I mean, I remember
had a high failure rate.
Yeah, I remember
and it was
like specifically. They were one of the benefits that was touted was these things will last a long time, and then it turned out a lot of them didn't. And some of them did last a long time, but
they didn't last as long
as they
should
said.
Have, okay?
Let me
finish this, because I had two brands of LEDs that I had put in. There were the
and
ones
one
that were not in those hi-hats. Yes, one was way better. The ones that were not the hi-hats, I bought a whole bunch of Philips light bulbs.
Now, remind us what's the hi-hat.
Those Philips. The hi-hat are the ones that are embedded on the ceiling, okay?
Right.
That are kind of okay? They're inside the ceiling. And then the other ones that I bought these bulbs that were bulbs to replace where there were regular bulbs to stick in bulbs, okay? In other places that were not in the ceiling, okay? Those bought were Philips.
Yep.
And the Philips, look, I still have, they are 15 years old.
Well, one of the
all of them have. This is actually, most of them actually did not fail. I actually came that the fixture, in some cases, the fixtures had rusted and the bulbs are still working with the Phillips. Okay,
well,
so
I
was like
one of the problems,
the rusted fixtures.
One of the problems with the first generation of LED bulbs was that they did badly in places that heated up. So like the ones that were actually in enclosures of one sort or another did worse than the ones that had more airflow. Now, and they fixed that subsequently, but that was one of the problems in the first generation of these things.
And I think that, that may be what happened with the ones in the ceiling itself. They did last 8 years, 8, 9, 10 years. Okay. But considering that I had put in the Phillips before and none of the Phillips had failed. Okay. I mean, none of them.
Right.
Okay, I think maybe out of, I put in like 20 of those Phillips bulbs, maybe more, one failed, something like that. Phillips knows how to manufacture a fucking bulb. Okay, I'll give them a, by the way, Phillips is the one that, okay, because these bulbs were invented while I was at HP. Okay, by the way, HP is the one that came up with this in mm-hmm. HP Labs. The thing is that at some point, all of that was sold to Philips. And then Philips is the first one that actually made these work. Now, everybody else copied them afterwards, but Philips is the first one that made these. So the Philips ones were really rock solid. They were really good, okay? And so the Philips bulbs were the best. Every other brand were cheap knockoffs and... almost every other brand that I tried was shit, except the Philips. And then I got these ones that were from Home Depot or built in. I think right now at this point, I have replaced all of those that were put in 2014. So they lasted about 10 years, you know. Mm-hmm. Now they're all replaced with the newer versions that I'm going to guess that these will last a lot longer because, like you mentioned, they fixed the issue with these.
Right.
That's just a lot of those in that situation where it's in the ceiling, not enough airflow. They died. So, there was one time I went to replace one of them. It started working again. I'm like, oh, wait, I was thrilled. I'm like, oh, no, I don't have to do it. Good. But you were disappointed.
I was disappointed. Because I don't get to change light bulbs that often anymore. It was like, you know, okay. I was excited. I went out to the back porch. And then the old one just turned on. I mean, I could have replaced it anyway because I was out there. But no, I was like, no, it's still working.
No, it's working. No, leave it.
Yeah, exactly. And also, it's not like it's not one that, not that this would affect my decision, but it's not like what I would call a key light bulb. I mean, it was probably out for a year before I even noticed it was out. You know, it's like, it's the backyard light. We don't use our backyard space very often. We turn on the light sometimes to look out to the backyard from inside. And there's like, you know, one bulb on each side of the door. And we noticed, and it was the one that was further away. And so, you know, unless you were looking from outside, you don't really notice. And we weren't looking from outside very often at that. So, but anyway.
Danny.
So with this fun, exciting talk about light bulbs. Yeah. We're going to do our usual, I guess, and do the less newsy stuff first. And then, you know, I got a couple movies.
There's no news.
Oh, you're going to do this thing again? Yeah.
Did anything happen?
Yeah. This is Yvonne's little routine about how there's no news on weeks where there's clearly news.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
No, nothing.
I don't know why you're saying that I'm pretending about this. I don't know. There's news. There news. What news? What are you talking about?
Something happened. I'm sure you're talking about the Winter Olympics.
They had their closing ceremony
since we last talked, didn't they? Something
like
that.
Do you realize that I did? You know, I am not. I used to watch the Olympics. I am no longer an Olympics person.
Right.
I just, I don't think I watched a single, I did not tune into an Olympics channel, watch like voluntarily, like a single second of the Olympics. Okay.
I'm finding myself checking to see, did it actually end this week or not? Or was it like two weeks ago?
No, it was this week. It was this week.
Okay.
That's
clearly it. That's clearly what you're talking about.
Yeah. No, I woke up and we're at war, Sam.
I was still awake when that happened. And, you know, so.
No, I was sound asleep.
we got those extra West Coast hours over here.
I almost got myself killed. I came way too damn close to getting killed this week, Sam. I was not.
You mentioned this on the Slack, but tell our listeners, what happened to you this week?
I'll tell the short version, so we don't, you know, because I know it, we ran long on light bulbs. But look, very simple. I go when I travel in most big cities, you know, if I'm in walking distance of somewhere, I will walk there. I'm not going to take a car. There's no point. Okay. Usually, the traffic is so bad in big cities that, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Okay. So, you know, I've walked back and forth to this place many times, and, you know, in the Dominican Republic and in the capital in Santo Domingo, and it's just that the traffic is just brutal in that over there. But the thing is, the cyclists, the motorcycle guys, are nuts, and I mean they have a reputation for it. They're very just crazy. On the streets.
I mean, it's just,
forget about just lane splitting, cutting, running red lights, whatever. They will do it all. Okay. They just don't care. And at very high speeds. And so look, I was crossing the street in one place where traffic had stopped. Crossing the streets over here, the cars aren't exactly like giving way anyway either. Okay. They don't really like to give way. So the traffic had stopped, and I was on the phone talking to my wife, and I am at the middle of this intersection waiting for traffic to pass, and I see that the traffic had slowed down, but cars had stopped, so I could weave through the cars, and I tell my wife, listen, hang on one second, because I didn't want to be on the phone talking as I'm crossing the street. I wanted to be paying attention to what I'm doing, and I'm like, just hang on one second. So I put the phone down, like I had it like by my ear, and I put it down like by my waist, so I'm not on the phone. I didn't want to hang up. So I cross the streets, three lanes. I cross the first and the second one. I'm in front of a stopped car, and cars were moving on the third one, and a car over there stopped to let me through, okay? So there was a big SUV behind me, and I looked to see if a motorcycle's coming, and I didn't see one, but this guy was coming up so fast that as I went to cross, his motorcycle was coming through, and I had walked in. I realized it's coming. I literally have this guy's cyclist face like in front of me less than a few inches, and I did manage to jump back out and not get hit by the motorcycle.
Okay.
That was too close for comfort.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Way too close for comfort.
If you remember, not a motorcycle, but in my family, there were at least two pedestrian versus car accidents over the last, I don't know, oh, it's been a while now, but a few years back, a car, my dad was crossing the street and had just stepped off the curb, and a car ran over his foot.
Ouch.
You know, as it was, you know, turning around the corner where he was crossing at an intersection with, you know, the walk light for pedestrians on. And then, my mother-in-law, just like 2 years ago, was crossing the street at a crosswalk in front of her church, and a car just barreled right into her. Like, you know, she was in the hospital for like a while for that, and recovering for months after that. And I don't know what the story was with the guy who ran over my dad's foot. But the guy who hit my mother-in-law was paying attention to a baseball game on the radio and not looking at what was in front of him and speeding as he passed by this church.
Nice. Not bad. Yeah. No, I mean, in my case, I walk very defensively, which is why
presumably the guy in the motorcycle was doing something wrong, right? He was going too fast.
The guy was like speeding and lane splitting and speeding at a very high rate of speed. And if I remember correctly, he also ran a red light.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Was it a hit and run? Did he leave? Well, he didn't hit you. He almost didn't hit me. So.
Oh, he just kept going. Yeah.
Okay. Well, as I said on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, I'm glad you're not dead.
But like I said, one thing, look, all I said about that incident, the one thing that would have really made it way, way, way worse is, look, if that guy hit me, right? My wife is listening to this as it's happening, right?
Right.
And she's 1,000 miles away. I cannot imagine the ridiculously helpless feeling that she would have if that happened.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, if she doesn't hear it, it's not as bad. But I just thought this couldn't have been any worse if I got hit. Okay.
Right.
So thank God that, you know, but that's the reason why I usually try to be very, like, she called me. I don't try to be walking and being on, when I'm walking streets like that, I'm not walking and being on the phone. Okay? I don't do that. I'll take a phone call, like my wife called me, but I try usually not to even do that. Okay? But, I'm traveling. It's hit and miss when we can, like, you know, because she called me. I believe I called her because I had been in a meeting and she tried to call me a couple of hours earlier and I couldn't talk to her. So I was like calling her back.
Right.
You know, so it's one of those things. But I usually try to, like, if I'm walking in the city streets like that, I'm like not on my phone. No. You have to be paying attention, especially in these cities where traffic is crazy. You know, I mean, it's crazier than here. And so, yeah. So, you know, you want to be mindful. So,
speaking of close calls, traffic in cities, etc., this seems like a good opportunity to once again tell the story of the when I first came to Seattle. Like, I've mentioned this before, I'm sure, but I'd already interviewed and I'd gotten the job here, but I was going to be in temporary housing, and so the bottom line was, when I got my rental car, they were out of, like, regular old sedans or whatever. Okay. And they gave me, like, I forget what it was, whether it was, I think it was, in my head, it was a pickup truck, but it may have been like an SUV or something. Remember, this was 20 some years ago, but whatever. Okay. It was a bigger vehicle than I was used to. Okay. And so I had found, like, my hotel or whatever, and it was brand new to the city, and, like, I found a place to park, whatever, and I was getting out of the truck in order to, you know, go check into my hotel or whatever. I'm trying to remember it didn't have, like, a place to pull up to check in. It was like I parked across the street or something. I forget the details. Anyway, I had parked on the street and was getting out of the truck. And I was unused to the size of the truck. So I went to step out of the truck.
Oh,
and
boy.
The ground was not where I expected it to be.
Ah, right.
Okay, so I basically fell out of the truck. Okay. And I stumbled forward several feet and I missed getting squashed by a bus by less than 5 inches.
Nice.
Like, I saw the bus go vroom right in front of my face, like an inch or two away from my face. And, like, you know, that would have been the end of my Seattle adventures if I had stumbled 1 or 2 inches further at that moment. It would have been all done. It would not have been survivable. I would have been done.
Love, Lovely.
And I was, of course, extremely traumatized, but completely unhurt. But like it was probably the closest call in my life to a life-ending traumatic event like that. There was one.
That's very sobering.
There might have been another health issue when I was a teenager. Like, I was in the hospital for some asthma stuff, and apparently it was touch and go for a while. But I barely remember that. This was like, I fell out of a damn truck and was inches away from getting clobbered by a bus, you know, that was going at, you know, full city bus speed. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, going highway speeds or anything, but it was quite enough that I would not have survived that incident if it had just been a couple inches different. And so, yes, it was very sobering. It was like, I was quite shaken for the rest of that evening. So.
Well, you're here. So
I am here.
We both are here. So there you go. So we've managed to make it so far.
20 plus years later, I'm still here. So.
Well, okay, shall we do your movies?
Well, let's do movies before we go to war. Well, we already went to war, but before we talk about going to war, the most recent warlike adventures from our wonderful president. Okay.
Warlike?
Well,
I don't see it as warlike. It's pretty actual war. Not
well,
war-like.
You see, the thing is, and we can talk about this when we actually hit the subject, but we have yet to see, like, to me, it's unfortunate, but we almost have to start making the distinction between the events that sort of last a few days or a week and then are done.
Oh, versus, I see what you're saying.
Versus, you know,
how many days is it a skirmish versus a war? So Ukraine is a war. Okay,
that's
a war.
But like,
right.
Did Venezuela turn out to be a war?
No, it was basically over
in a couple hours.
Right. Venezuela's not a war. Yeah, it's a skirmish, not a war.
Was it an act of war according to international law? Absolutely.
But it's not a war. I mean, but not yet.
Right.
Sam, I mean, for, you know, anyway.
Anyway, okay, movies. First up from 2002, Blade 2.
Is that with, what's his name, the tax
Wesley
guy?
Wesley Snipes.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Why can't I remember his name? I remember, he's always the tax guy.
And a while ago, we talked about me watching Blade, the original. This is the sequel.
I mean, well, for those that don't know, okay, yes. Because I call him the tax guy, Wesley Snipes got this brilliant financial advisor that basically basically convinced them that he should declare himself, I think, a sovereign citizen, basically that he didn't owe any taxes. And so he filed to get a tax refund for all the taxes that he had filed in 2 years prior, tens of millions of dollars. The IRS did not take this lightly and basically went after him. And then he hadn't filed other taxes. So they went after him criminally and threw him in jail for tax evasion.
Okay. Yes. This is him.
But it's the kind of stuff that doesn't happen to our president who does the same thing. But anyway.
Anyway.
Only two black guys. Seems.
Now, Blade is technically a Marvel property, but this is...
It is?
Yes, I believe that we had discussed this last time we talked about this.
Fuck if I know. I don't know any of these things.
But but this is not part of the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Blade was a Marvel Comics character. And I believe Alex and I were watching this as going systematically through Marvel-based movies, of which another was your favorite, Howard the Duck. So, also Marvel.
God, I still can't believe that's a Marvel movie. Don't understand.
Also not MCU, though.
Right.
Anyway, some of you may remember, I'm pretty sure I gave no better than a thumb sideways to the original movie and probably a thumbs down. These do not get better, I don't think, as you go along through the series.
Didn't they do well at the box office?
They did fine, I think. Box office.
I mean, I know he did a couple of these. I'm looking it up. 57% in Rotten Tomatoes.
This one made $80 million in the U.S. and
Blade 2.
That's not a huge amount, but it's, you know.
Well, no, but a U.S. But here's the thing: it's a low budget movie. Blade 2, $54 million budget, which considering like where budgets are for movies, it's pretty low budget. $155 million total box office.
Yeah.
Not that bad.
Yeah. Anyway, it's the kind of movie, like, well, let me give the first couple paragraphs of the plot like I usually do. Again, from Wikipedia. In Prague, Blade searches for his mentor, Abraham Whistler, who is thought dead after being attacked by Deacon Frost, but was instead turned into a vampire and held prisoner by them for 2 years. After interrogating Vampire Rush on Whistler's whereabouts, Blade rescues Whistler and cures him of his vampirism. Whistler meets Scud, Blade's young, gifted new technician.
Vampirism? Vampirism?
Vampirism? Vampirism? Yeah.
Okay.
A pandemic is turning vampires into reapers. Primal mutant creatures with a ravenous thirst for blood.
So that's how we got RFK.
And a highly infectious bite that transforms both humans and vampires alike. The original carrier of the Reaper strain and cause of the pandemic is Jared Nomak, who bears hatred towards the vampire race.
To combat— Are you sure this isn't a historical, like, the thing? I mean, because if I use this to explain some of the shit we're going through, this explains a lot.
To combat the Reapers, vampire overlord Eli Demaskinos sends his trusted servant Assad and his daughter Nissa to strike a truce with Blade. Knowing humans will be the Reapers' next target after vampires, Blade reluctantly allies himself with them. And it continues. Look, my basic complaint about this one, and probably why it still did decently, is the same thing that I believe we talked about last week on, like, the last Allegiant one. It's like 100% move from, like, one violent action fight scene to a few seconds of exposition to the next violent fight scene. To, you know, and
the whole point of the movie is the violent scenes.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not really the plot. Well, let's just kind of like sprinkle some kind of semblance of a plot here, just for an excuse for a whole bunch of action scenes.
Yes, I mean, and look, it's not all violence. There's also chase scenes.
You gotta chase the person to get to the violence. Yes.
Yes. And, okay. As a former physics major, there was also, these are vampires who are sensitive, of course, to like sunlight and such.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
And so,
but
one of the things they had in this movie was basically sunlight grenades. Okay. These things would go off, and it would basically produce a bright light, okay? And then the vampires would die exposed to this bright light and the other creatures that were in this as well, the Reapers.
Sunlight grenades.
But here's the thing.
There's a thing.
The light from these grenades
went
around corners.
Whoa!
And like, it's basically just a really bright flashlight
that manages to go around corners.
It goes around corners. I mean, it's like the light would explode, like a regular explosion, but it was just light. But light does not go around corners. Light goes straight. I mean, it'll bounce off mirrors and stuff, but that's not what was happening here. They were like in like the sewers under some European, Eastern European city, and they would set it off and the light and light would expand out, by the way, not at the speed of light. It wouldn't be just like turning on a flashlight. It would go vroom and expand out from wherever this grenade went off and go around corners and all. And I, every time this was happening, I was pausing the movie and complaining to Alex about how light wouldn't behave that way. And all these are bright flashlights. So why is it happening this way? And then they were like, you know, they had, I don't know. It bugged me. It bugged me. That was like a thing in this movie. And no, it was anyway.
It does sound idiotic. Look, I love that this thing. Look, there's one thing. I was looking at Wikipedia like page on this. I love this blurb. Okay, this is a fantastic blurb. There's a video game released on this book. Okay.
Okay.
All right. A video. Anybody here? Here's the blurb on the. This is the best blurb. Okay. It's just.
Okay.
There's a single line about this in the Wikipedia review. Video game. A video game, Blade 2, was released for PlayStation 2 and Xbox on September 3rd, 2002. Period. Reviews were generally negative.
Right. There you go.
You know. Yeah. You know.
There's
vampires. Third movie, by the way.
Yes, I have not yet seen the third movie, so don't spoil it.
I'm not going to go with spoilers. I'm going to go into revenue because you know what we talked about with Divergent, how they started doing worse and worse each time?
Yes.
They did increase the budget a little bit to $65 million, but the box office was down like $20 million to $132 million. But still, considering, you know, movies and how they go now and spend $300 million on a movie only to get $300 million in revenue, I would guess that for a studio, they're like, it's not bad. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, this works. We can work with this. You know?
Exactly.
They also made Blade the series. Man, I tell you what.
I'm guessing the TV series I'm guessing the TV series is toned down a little. This had, you know, in addition to lots of violence, and they made it graphic and gory violence in many cases, there's also, you know, lots of swearing. Basically, Wesley Snipes is being a badass and, you know, doing the thing. I was going to say sex stuff, but it's not like real sex. It's not even rated R, right? This thing's rated PG-13, I think, probably.
By the way, speaking of how movies going downwards.
Yes.
The previous one had like Rotten Tomatoes. Blade 2 was like, I think it looked like 50, 60 Rotten Tomatoes approval.
Okay.
So I went to Blade, the third one, the Blade Trinity.
57.
57. On the Rotten Tomatoes, the film has a 24% approval rating. So this thing basically just like went off.
For number three.
For number three, it's just, hey.
I'm looking forward to that one then.
It basically is just driving off a cliff in terms of, this goes with a little bit of like how, I know that he must have done it for the money, the guy
I'm
that
sure.
did he did it for the money, I'm sure. But it's the same thing as like with the Jason Bourne films where, what's his name, that did the Bourne films. He said at one point that I'm like, he declined at one point to do a movie and somebody else did it instead of him. And he said, man, look, they came to me, let's do another one of these. And I was just like, man, what are we going to call it? The Bourne redundancy? I mean, what the hell? It's the same shit over and over. We keep milking this for, you know, to no end. Okay?
Right.
You know, enough. Enough.
Okay.
Thumbs down?
Well, since we decided to be more graduated, halfway between thumb sideways and thumbs down. I'm not going to give it a straight up thumbs down.
You're a thumb angle down, but not straight down.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And because like I'm reserving straight down for the worst of the worst. And this isn't quite that bad.
This isn't quite that bad.
But I would certainly not recommend this movie unless what we have described here, like, is the kind of thing you like.
You just want, like, some kind of, like, hey, I need my fix of graphic violence and some sexual innuendo on TV.
Right.
I'm bored. Yes. I can't find anything else. Where can I find this? Oh, Blade! 2!
Exactly. Okay, next up, from 2025, which we actually saw in the theaters, a Minecraft movie.
Oh, well, I've watched this.
You've watched it?
Okay. Yes, so, like the man who likes Minecraft. We went to see the movie, yes.
So let's get your thoughts first, then. What did you think of it?
Okay, I'll give the short, brief summary because it was a while back when I watched
give what is your experience with the game? Like, how much have you played yourself? I know Manu's played a little bit. How much have you played?
I mean, I've played some, you know. Okay. I mean, I've played with them, you know. So,
but
you're
not like deeply familiar with the Minecraft lore and things like that.
Lore itself. Well, I know all the characters, like all the little like creeper. You know, I know all the. You know, I recognize all the things that appeared in the movie. I don't know about the lore itself. Probably not. But
now,
you know.
Let me get a basic like level set. Did you understand what was happening when they had the Technoblade cameo? Or did you recognize Dan TDM when he was on the screen?
No.
Okay. See. So you're
I'm
not
that
deeply
deep into
enough.
It. I'm familiar. No, I'm familiar. I'm just
two YouTubers who like one was referenced and one made a cameo.
No.
And there were some
like I said, I'm like familiar with it, but I'm not. Not even close. But look, I found the movie. Me personally, yeah. I'll give the brief because you just saw it more recently. I liked it. It was
well,
fun.
I saw it when it was in the theaters. So like, you know, I couldn't have seen much more recently than you.
Well, I thought it was, you know what? It was a fun movie. I liked it.
I'm going to agree. Thumbs up from me as well. And yeah. I am like, it wasn't.
I was surprised. I thought it was going to suck. I thought this was a terrible idea.
I did
how
too.
The hell are they going to make a whole fucking movie about Minecraft was what I was
well,
thinking.
I
came out very pleasantly surprised. I said, hey, this was fun. Manu liked it too.
And I wasn't surprised about making a movie out of Minecraft because I've watched many an animated thing on YouTube that's in Minecraft. Fully. What I was dubious about was the fact that this mixes real life and Minecraft.
Right.
As opposed
Correct.
To really
right.
being an animated thing completely within the world of Minecraft. Instead, it starts out in the human world and then they move into Minecraft and it's sort of a weird hybrid and they sort of acknowledge the gaminess of it as
yes.
well.
Yes.
And so it doesn't take itself super seriously.
No.
I haven't given the actual plot, so let me read the first couple paragraphs there, too. Struggling doorknob salesman Steve breaks into a mine to fulfill a childhood dream, where he discovers the Orb of Dominance and the Earth Crystal. When combined, they create a portal that transports him to the overworld, a world where the terrain is made of easily manipulated cubes. He builds his own paradise and later stumbles across a porter to a hellish world called the Nether. He is imprisoned by Malgosha, the gold-obsessed piglin ruler of the Nether who gravely discourages creativity. Because the orb would allow her to control the overworld, Steve has his dog Dennis escape with the orb and crystal and hide them under his bed in the real world. Sometime later, 1980s video game champion Garrett the Garbage Man Garrison owns a failing video game store in Chugless, Idaho. He heads to a storage auction to acquire items to sell for cash, ultimately winning the contents of Steve's old house. While searching through the items, particularly hoping to find an Atari Cosmos, he instead finds Steve's old belongings, including the orb and crystal, .. Anyway, a couple kids and that guy end up, you know, also following into the overworld, into the world of Minecraft, and having adventures, rescuing Steve, etc. Sorry, spoilers. And anyway, I agree. It surprised me for being a lot of fun. Was it perfect? No. There were things I could quibble with. As someone who has followed some of the Minecraft stuff, I liked the cameos. I haven't watched all there are a whole bunch of YouTubers that did cameos. There we go. So cameos are of YouTubers. Dan TDM, who I mentioned, who Alex watched tons of Dan TDM when he was younger. Not anymore, really, but I'll occasionally put it on because I miss Dan TDM because, like, I watched it too because Alex was watching it. AppMal, who I don't know. Mumbo Jumbo, who we watched a bunch of as well. Mumbo Jumbo is a Minecraft redstone YouTuber. He makes all kinds of contraptions out of redstone in Minecraft and does some other things too. And apparently he didn't make he did make a cameo, but he also helped design some of the redstone mechanisms in the game to make sure that in the movie to make sure they were matched the game. LD Shadow Lady, I didn't really watch a lot of her, but I would recognize her. And one of the developers of Minecraft, who's one of their spokespeople when they have events announcing new features and stuff, made a cameo as well. And I mentioned Technoblade. Technoblade was a YouTuber who died very young of cancer. He was a Minecraft YouTuber, very big Minecraft YouTuber. And they included a cameo of his like character, like walking across the street and made a little statement to him. And like, I caught all those references. And
I'm not that, you know.
I recognized the people. I was like, oh, there's Dan. And oh, that's the Technoblade reference. I never really watched Technoblade's channel, but I knew who he was and I knew the reference and I knew it was coming, et cetera. And so I appreciated all that because I mentioned they didn't take themselves seriously at all, but they also treated it with some respect so that, like, if you played the game a lot, if you were, you know, and had all this background, you would appreciate it and not be like, oh man, they're completely messing it all up. They didn't mess it all up. They did it fairly well. And so, yeah, I enjoyed it. I think there's going to be a sequel. Yep. Talks for a potential sequel began a few days after release. Looks like the release date of the sequel is going to be in 2027. So yeah, it was fun. I liked it. Thumbs up. Even more thumbs up if you have sort of followed Minecraft on YouTube specifically and watched, like, you know, some of, you know, there's everything from Minecraft music videos to whole stories that were done animated in Minecraft and all this kind of stuff. And if you followed, like, some of the long running sort of adventure series where people are playing the game but sort of acting out an adventure within it on YouTube, you appreciate it even more, I think, if you followed some of that stuff. But even if you haven't, I think it was just a fun little movie. So there you go. Thumbs up to a Minecraft movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Movie. So, all right.
Ready for a break? And then I guess we can talk war and destruction. And, I only had two, aside from movies and TV that I added to the list this week, the only two other things on our list were the violence in Mexico and Iran.
Oh, fuck.
That's the only two things that got.
Because, of course, added. You know, to hell. Jesus Christ.
Yes. Okay. But we'll be back after this one.
AlexMZWest.com. Bang Alex and Dad. Gaming videos and more from Alex. Elementary school by day. YouTube by night. AlexMZWest.com. AlexMZWest is AlexMXELA. And .com is period and then COM.
Okay. So I ran her Mexico. Where do you want to start? Or do you want to throw a curveball and talk about something else entirely?
Let's talk about Iran. And then
save those for the next segment. Okay. So as we are, I'm going to caveat like I often do with breaking news events. We are recording this Saturday. And Saturday, February 28th, as I mentioned at the beginning, this is an ongoing news event as we are speaking. There are still attacks going on. Iran is counterattacking. Things are happening. The events of the day are going to overtake us. By the time you listen to this, things will have changed since, you know, midday Saturday U.S. time. It's in the afternoon for Yvonne. It's right before noon for,
why are we
for
doing
me
this
here
again,
on the West
Sam?
Coast. Iran bad, Alex. No, you're not Alex. I get you all confused all the time. I get the dog confused. Luckily my family doesn't mind when I accidentally call them by the dog's name. They get amused when I call the dog Alex.
We need to send you out to pasture. Just like we did with Biden, because you keep getting names confused.
Once I'm in that pasture with the cows, I am sure I will call one of them Yvonne.
Probably. So why are we doing this again? What the fuck, Sam? What the fuck are we doing? Listen, this is just another.
Okay. It looks fairly clear that what Trump and or the people behind Trump that have been pushing for this, they're straight up after regime change. Like,
come on. Look.
Now, whether or not they succeed is another question.
No. No.
You think it's all just distraction from Epstein or whatever?
Are you fucking kidding me? I literally said on the Slack 2 weeks ago, literally asked, when are we attacking Iran?
Well, the talk of us attacking Iran has been going on for months anyway.
No. But
Israel's been pushing it. So it's
is the biggest one. Israel, obviously, has been goading Trump to attack Iran. This has been, I mean, Bibi has wanted this. But also, by the way, why does Bibi want to attack Iran? What's the primary reason?
Oh, is he also trying to stay in office?
No!
And stay out of jail?
You get don't say, Sam!
No, but... Okay.
I got Bibi wanting... Listen.
Wait. I don't like saying these words myself either, but to be fair to Bibi, he's wanted to go after Iran for decades.
True. But also, as an extra motivation, that does help. Right?
Yeah. None of this hurts. I'm sure the timing was probably influenced by stuff we need.
I think that's the main thing. It's the whole timing. Why now? And I think it has to do more with trying to divert and distract from all the other shit going on, both in Israel and the United States, than anything else. Because we're in the middle of negotiations with Iran, where we're talking, we're doing whatever, and you know what? We just go, we're bombing them.
Well, I'm not sure how much of those negotiations was ever really in good faith anyway.
Well, Sam, how could they be in good faith in the first place? Listen, this entire thing has been a charade from the beginning. Look, we had, like Tim Kaine I just saw said, we had a deal with these guys, and we broke it!
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, and look, in terms of what, you know, I said the sort of nominal, all the language they're using is more aligned with regime change than anything else. But in terms of like what's actually likely to happen, I feel like, you know, maybe they'll get lucky and do something like they did in Venezuela.
Sam, let me ask a question.
I have a question for you about the regime change thing.
When you say regime change, what do you think it means for them?
I really don't think they think any further than let's get rid of the one or two people at the top.
Let's just topple it, and then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sounds like a brilliant plan, Sam.
I honestly don't think they think multiple steps ahead in terms of this kind of stuff. It doesn't seem like they did in Venezuela. I don't think they would here too. I mean, when experts are talking about like what happens in Iran, like they're like, hey, let's say they succeeded and they killed the Ayatollah today.
Uh-huh.
And what is the most likely result of that? It is not, oh, wow, suddenly a democracy springs up tomorrow that's friendly to the West. No, most likely you get years of chaos.
By the way, I just opened an article in the New York Times talking about this, and BB, let me read this sentence here. This is from an article that says, Netanyahu takes a shot at regime change in Iran. I'll give you this line. Nothing would burnish the legacy of Mr. Netanyahu, Israel's longest-serving prime minister, more than toppling the Islamic Republic, which he has likened to Hitler's Germany, and ending its nuclear program for good.
Uh-huh.
How about that?
Well, and look, and honestly, if he succeeded, he might be right. I mean, and this is the thing, too. Like, and this is the same kind of argument we were having about Venezuela as well. Let's assume, like, well... Let's not assume. Well, okay. For the sake of argument, let's say everything about this goes perfectly for Donald Trump. Yeah. Okay. You know, we have limited to no American casualties. Civilian casualties aren't that big, although I've seen some unconfirmed reports that we may have hit a school by mistake. You know, I don't know if it's true or not. Fog of war kind of stuff. We'll know more eventually. But let's assume limited American casualties, limited civilian casualties. We decapitate the Iranian government. It falls and we get a good, friendly government that is good on human rights and likes the West and blah, blah, blah. I mean, we're talking about like the heir of the Shah coming back. He's one of the people that's been agitating lately in Iran.
Well, I mean, the Shah was another dictator and a brutal dictator anyway. I mean, what the hell, man? It's not exactly like, you know, like the Shah was like this benevolent guy.
What can I tell you? Anyway, so assume everything goes well. Then, yes, Donald Trump will get some accolades for doing something that ended up turning out positively. Now, it may not, but let's assume it does. It is still completely and totally illegal for him to have done it.
It is?
So the
checks and balances will now come into play, right?
There's been no... Congress has not authorized this in any way, let alone an actual declaration of war. He hasn't done any selling of this. I mean, he had the State of the Union a few days ago and did not talk about, he did not make a case for doing something against Iran at the State of the Union. I think he may have mentioned it, but not extensively. It wasn't like a major theme. If you poll the American public, support for us taking this kind of action is incredibly low. But he's doing it anyway, and that's just domestic stuff. Internationally, it also does not meet any of the requirements for a legal action as far as international law is concerned. Of course, we don't give even the slightest crap about that. But nevertheless, this is the kind of thing where, I mean, remember how conflicted, when we talked about Venezuela, you're like, yes, Sam, he's doing it illegally, but somebody needed to do this. And there are a lot of people who are going to feel the same way about Iran. Now, whether or not like this goes into, I mentioned the positive scenario. Of course, the worst case negative scenario is an ongoing Middle East war that spirals out of control and consumes multiple countries. But I think the most likely scenario is neither of those. The most likely scenario is, you know, they've said this is campaign is going to last days, not hours. I've heard like 4 or 5 days of intensive bombing and such of the country. We're going to do that. We're going to kill a few high profile people. I saw there were initial reports that maybe we got the supreme leader, but it seems like no, we probably didn't. He was evacuated. He's fine, probably. But we did get a couple of high ranking people, and we'll probably get more before we're done. But we've done that before. And you remember, it was just a few months ago where we supposedly completely eliminated their nuclear capability anyway.
Yeah, what happened?
I mean, Donald Trump said so.
They're so good, Sam. They managed to, after we completely wiped out their nuclear capability, Sam, they managed to rebuild it in just a few months. They're incredible.
Well, somebody in the Trump administration did an interview where he once again said they were 1 week away from making a weapon, which, of course, wait. But
what?
I thought we completely destroyed all their capabilities and made it so that they couldn't even think of rebuilding anything for decades.
Right.
But apparently, a few months later, we're 1 week away again. And so, and look, bottom line is there's no trustworthy narrator here. So, you know, what's the real situation on the ground? Fucked if I know, you know? Because you certainly can't trust anything the Trump administration is saying. You certainly can't say anything. You can't trust anything Netanyahu's saying. You can't trust anything the Iranians are saying either.
Right.
So who the hell knows?
Who the hell knows?
You know, but at the same time, yeah, I feel like the most likely scenario is once again, we engage in a military campaign. It lasts a few days. There's some damage. But basically, we end up not really changing substantially the facts on the ground. That's the most likely scenario. And I don't know, we repeat this again in another 6 months? I don't know. I mean, it could go the way that everything goes Donald Trump's way and we have a completely changed Iran in a few months, or it could go the way where we have the regional war that drags on for years. Either of those could happen too, but I feel like the most likely is just we bomb them for a few days, and then a week or two from now, we're not even talking about
you know,
it anymore.
We're not talking
about Venezuela much anymore.
You know, about the only positive thing that I could say about the Trump administration for the first Trump administration was that they never got us into any major conflict like this. Okay, and look now, look at this shit. I mean, look now, it's just. I mean,
well, just to be clear, having previewed the next 3 years, this is absolutely nothing compared to the land war in Greenland coming up soon.
Listen, yeah, well, of course. So what are who are we finding fighting polar bears? I guess. I mean, is that what we're doing? I'm like, you know, he's got now this taste for bombs, if you haven't noticed. He likes just unleashing his bombs and the airplanes and showing them off. And so this is going to escalate, unfortunately. He's going to be doing this more and more.
Well, it's just like tariffs. Once he finds a toy that he figures out the levers to play with it, and he knows, if I do this, I can drive the news cycle. I can get attention. I can get this. I can get that. I can use this as leverage.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
This will drive the news cycle the direction I want it to be driven in. This has nothing else to do with anything else, Sam. Nothing. Not regime change, not nothing. It's how can I drive the news cycle to pay attention to something else, what I want attention to be paid to. And that is the only, it's you know, the worst thing is this is the only thing that motivates him.
Yeah, I mean, like, he gave that little speech last night about, like, now's your chance, Iranians, rise up.
Like,
and,
he could give
know,
two flying fucks about the Iranian people.
Exactly. Isn't he deporting Iranian refugees who
yes!
are here? I mean, come on.
Come on. Give me you a
know,
fuck a
there
break.
Are people who have, there are people who have fled the regime there that we are
actively
trying to send back.
Right.
And you know, and not just Iran, of course. Like, we're doing the same thing with Afghanistan, with all these places.
Everybody.
Like,
yeah. He doesn't give a fuck about any of them.
No, no. It's, yeah. If he cared about any of that stuff, he'd be actively supporting the people who had fled the regime and all this kind of stuff. No, 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 not. I'm sure there is some covert support for some internal Iranian opposition, because of course we're doing that. I'd be shocked if we weren't. But that
it's not the entire goal once again.
It's not
is
with
disruption.
Their best interests actually in mind.
Exactly. The entire goal is disruption, not any, you know, positive direction for Iran. I think that's the key thing.
Yes. Anything that is done by Trump and his administration anywhere in the world is certainly, like, you would think, like, at least you could argue, okay, he's worried about the interests of the U.S., not the interests of that country. And you'd be like, okay, that's normal. That's like every administration. Of course, they're looking out for the interests of the U.S. But in Donald Trump's case, he's not even doing that.
Right.
It's only his own interests.
Correct.
It's only his own personal interests. But frankly, one difference, even of previous administrations, that some have been more naked about, like, look, we only care about U.S. and we'll screw anybody
right.
else.
Yeah,
and we don't
yeah
give
but
a shit.
But it, he cares. They that, care about the U. They what they believe
right.
is the good thing for the U.S. This is only about the what he, you know, what is good for him.
Right. But I was also going to say, even compared to we have had some administrations where they actually recognize that sometimes the best way to benefit the U.S. is to benefit the other countries as well, because there's a such thing as a win-win relationship. And when we
in his mind, there is no such thing as a win-win. Those
right.
don't exist
ever.
Those don't exist at all.
And the whole concept of soft power, where you end up benefiting this country by providing a good example and making people like you. No. You know, they like you because you helped them when they were in need and provided a good example and blah, blah, blah. You know, now the U.S. has a very mixed record of that kind of stuff, to be completely honest. However, at least like some administrations actually believed in that and tried to do that and, you know, and had some decent success over
the
last
100
years.
Maybe they didn't do it to every country consistently, okay? All right? And they did it in some ways that it was bad. But the reality is that in many cases, they actively tried to do that and did that with some countries. With others, they didn't do it
that
well.
I mean, that was the whole concept of USAID, which, of course,
we eliminated.
Yes. I mean, is that we can use our extreme wealth to help out all over the world in ways that it really, in the grand scheme of things, did not cost us a lot of money.
No!
But helped a lot of people and left them feeling good about, hey, they helped us.
Yes!
And,
yes,
you know, as we've both said, we haven't always been consistent about this. We've often done it badly. We've often, taken advantage of people.
But there was a general intention direction in terms of advancing American interest, and in many cases, helping some of these countries, even when we didn't do it positively. Okay. Sometimes a failure of vision. Many times it was a failure of us understanding the country, you know. For the most part, the president wasn't actively trying, you know, they thought that they were advancing the interests of the United States. And sometimes they said, well, the interest of the U.S. is more important than others. We don't care about it. But it was, even in their misguided way, it was still the interest of the United States that they were thinking in the first place. This is completely different. This has nothing to do with this. Any action that Trump does, that is not even remotely a thought.
Yep. It's all about what's in it for me. How is this going to help me in my personal situation right now?
Right now.
Whether it's distraction from other news that he doesn't want, or whether it's a monetary thing, or whether it's just attention. He does just like attention, too.
The guy is an attention whore. Everything is about attention to him, and everything is about a positive attention to him. And this, obviously, is much better positive attention than the Epstein files, or inflation, or I lost at SCOTUS with the tariffs, et cetera, et cetera, or the polls are bad, whatever.
And this is one of those things that you can almost count on. Most news coverage, including in outlets that are usually critical of Donald Trump, when you are at like a war footing, tend to be very deferential to like, oh, yeah, we're doing this and here's why and blah, 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 as opposed to, you know, just saying flat out over and over and over again, hey, this is an illegal action.
I was on the front page of the New York Times, like right now, editorial board, first article is basically saying, look at the articles, for example, one over here. For Trump, the Iran attack is the ultimate war of choice. That's one of the top stories about this. Opinion, editorial board, number one opinion, Trump's attack on Iran is reckless. This is not like deferring to Trump and his action in any way, shape, or form. I just saw MS Now putting Tim Kaine, like I said, that this was completely idiotic. That was the main thing on there. Okay, number one, look, opinions, Washington Post, there is no reason to think this war with Iran is necessary. The first fucking opinion under the editorial all of these are, listen, there is nothing here.
Maybe it's shifting quickly. Like before I went to sleep last night, when this was already ongoing, a lot of the initial coverage was saying things like, you know, it was repeating without a lot of questioning, like Israel says this is preemptive, for instance. Now later, a few hours later, I started seeing criticism of that. But the initial wave of coverage was basically just like Israel says this, the U.S. says this, without much of what you're talking about now. Maybe even just a few hours later, the tide is turning. Because, you know, once again, like I woke up again right before we started recording, you know, after watching a few hours of this coverage last night. So we shall see. I mean, again, polling on this before it happened was universally negative. Like when people were asked, should we be getting it? I mean, even amongst Trump voters, if you remember, one of the things that repeatedly was said during Trump's campaigns, both in 2016
and... The Democrats are warmongers. They're going out to go get us into war. Blah, 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 blah. Here's one from the Gavin Newsom's governor's press office. Donald Trump old tweet. Now that Obama's poll numbers are in a tailspin, watch him to launch a strike in Libya or Iran. He is desperate. As usual, everything is a motherfucking projection. Everything.
Yes. As Yvonne blows out the microphone, screaming into it. Yes. Yes. Everything is projection. And like, we've seen this, especially with Donald Trump, but frankly, the whole fucking Republican Party for years now, And this goes for the Epstein, like,
yes,
sex scandal stuff,
Epstein
too.
All thing, the whole pedophilia thing, the whole fucking, like, listen, the whole massive homophobia thing.
Yes.
For God's sakes.
Like, almost everything that they accuse the Democrats of, if you look at it in detail, the Democrats aren't doing it, but they are.
Right.
It's like, you know, and, you know, trying to mess with elections. Come on, who's doing that?
Right.
You know, all of it, over and over and over and over again. It's just like, you want to know what nefarious things the Republicans might be up to? Look at what they're accusing the Democrats of. You get a nearly 100% hit rate.
Yeah. Damn. So fucking.
Okay. Again, my prediction is that the, like our previous strikes on Iran, this one may be a bit bigger, but a few days, then immediate strike will be over. Things will calm down. And I don't know about next week, but 2 weeks from now, we may not even be talking about Iran on the show.
Here, I'm wondering, because everything to him is driven by attention,
I mean, if
poll
we,
numbers
it,
or whatever. If he starts getting a lot of negative publicity, right? Is that how this drives us real quickly? Where all of a sudden he's getting, it starts like, it being negative because he's getting shit from all his MAGA folks and everybody, whatever, then all of a sudden he completely turns around and changes. By the way, here's one that I saw. Tulsi Gabbard was in the Situation Room with Vance watching this launch. There's a tweet also that Gavin Newsom press office just shared from Tulsi. What do you think it says?
Oh, she was very big against attacks on Iran for years.
No war with Iran!
Yes.
You know what? Fuck you, look, Tulsi 2.4. I forget, which is my usual. I need to remember. Oh, by the way, before I give out my fuck yous for the week. Oh, fuck Jill Stein as well, too, this week. Walls apparently crawled out of her cave early.
Yes, she has surfaced. Yeah, it's like the groundhog.
Yeah.
When she pops up, No, look. I think it's almost simpler than like, there's negative backlash, so he backs off. I think it's almost no matter what's happening, good, bad, indifferent. Once we are done with the initial set of strikes that were planned, he's going to declare victory and call it done.
I mean, that's the MO, right?
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Looks
what
like with
the
every
actual
and if you think about it, it's almost like every battle, like every, and I'm not talking about battle war, just in general. Okay, I'm talking about the healthcare debate, the thing, whatever. How he goes and he says, there's a whole bunch of arguing and blah blah blah, negotiating blah 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 blah. Then he goes and he says, no, we're going to have a solution in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, the 2 weeks pass and we forget about it and we're on to something else.
Whatever new outrageous thing is going on. Now, I will say the one possible exception is, we got Maduro and he declared victory, but like that still disappeared off the headlines in a couple weeks. I feel like I was about to say the one exception might be if they actually kill the supreme leader. But even if they did that, we're probably moved on to something else in a few weeks.
There was a headline. I remember this one that somebody reposted from like 2016, which I remember that I believe I wanted to fucking like punch a screen or something when I read this. It's an article by Maureen Dowd who talked about Donald the Dove, Hillary the Hawk. And I still fucking remember somebody reposted that headline. And that's one where I want to fucking find Maureen Dowd right now and beat the shit out of her. Grab a fucking copy of it and fucking like rub it in her face.
Well, like you said, in his first term, he mostly stayed out of things. Now, I say mostly. He actually did dramatically increase the drone program from what Obama was doing.
Yep.
He was quieter about it, but there were more drone hits on more countries during Trump's first term than Obama had been doing. So he increased that, but he didn't outright start messing with additional countries. the second term, he absolutely has. He's all over the place, you know?
I mean, we
did a military attack on Nigeria at the end of last year.
Right, I forgot about that.
Does anybody even remember that?
Fuck no.
No.
I mean, Jesus Christ, we've had... Sam, it's like every fucking day, there's so much shit going on. I mean, if we went and we made a list of all the stupid shit that we've had... We've had Americans murdered on the streets by ICE. We've had an invasion of Minnesota by our own federal government. I mean, we helped an attack in Mexico. We murdered this fucking cartel leader and unleashed complete chaos in Mexico.
Well, with that, why don't we take a break and then talk about that? yes. Okay. This next one should be an Apple Dream, but I didn't prepare it, so we'll have an Apple Dream next week. And in the meantime, this break, and then we'll talk about Mexico and whatever else we end up talking about. Here we go.
You're supposed to say do, do, do.
Do, do, do.
Alex Amzella. Alex Amzella is awesome. Its videos are fun. And today, once again, we have one of our most loyal subscribers here to tell you how awesome Alex Amzella is.
I'd say on a rate from 1 to 10, Alex Amzella is awesome at, I don't know, 37, 82. He's pretty radical. His videos are phenomenal. They're full of creativity. And they're
so funny and exciting to watch.
Wow, what happened to your voice then, Amy? Was that Dad pretending to be you? Because the audio was distorted when it really wasn't because I told him to?
Yes!
Good job on remembering, Dad. Do, do, do!
Okay, we're back. So, Yvonne, you were starting to describe what happened in Mexico last week, and then I said, let's take a break. So continue where you left off. What the hell happened? We killed some drug lord.
Okay,
some drug lord with our help.
Okay, so apparently it did involve the U.S. Not sure exactly the extent, but the U.S. was involved in this, where the chief of the Jalisco drug cartel, okay, he used to be part of the Sinaloa cartel that kept getting mentioned a lot in the U.S. He was murdered. Okay, and the reaction by the members of the cartel was to unleash violence across significant parts of Mexico, okay, in response to that. I mean, I've been to Jalisco many times. I've been to the city of Guadalajara many times, or as the late, the late Lou Dobbs on TV once called it Farfulla, in which he was trying to pronounce the name of the city. Guadalajara is the second most important city in Mexico. It is a tech and industrial hub. Most major U.S. companies have operations in the city. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is a very developed area of the country. Okay, it's one of the most. But I said, you know, Mexico is very developed, but one of the most developed areas in the country. So all of a sudden, the airport was under siege. Okay, I mean, people had to run out. This is an airport that I've been to many times. Okay, so this is particularly like very disturbing to me. Okay, people wound up on the tarmac because the airport was under attack. The airport in Puerto Vallarta was also under attack. There were burning trucks. There were blocking roads. There were shooting. They burnt down the Costco and Costco's. They burnt down stores. It was just a massive, just, you know, eruption of violence across the state and in other parts of the country. It didn't affect the capital, okay? But the thing is that this was something that some of the people locally were telling me, that they didn't want to do this in large part because they feared what the reaction was going to be by doing this. But the president was forced by the Trump administration to pursue this action. This was not something that they were targeting, but that the Trump administration forced upon them.
let me ask one question about the violence, because most of the coverage that I have seen in U.S. media has sort of concentrated on the tourists.
Mm-hmm.
What's the actual balance in terms of where the violence was targeted? Is it specifically targeted against tourists, or is it actually against everybody?
Everybody.
And tourists were just caught up in it.
Yes, tourists were just caught up in it. It was against everybody. No, it was against everybody.
But of course, our coverage is about the tourists because they're more important than the locals, apparently.
Correct. Yes. No. But this is against everybody. Yeah. This is not targeting tourists at all. It was against everybody. This is not targeted against the tourists in any way. They just happened to get caught up. Flights canceled and shit, and airports closed all of a sudden, you know? I mean, Mexico gets so many U.S. tourists. I mean, it's crazy. So it is a massive amount of Americans that go to Mexico for tourism. And so, yeah, I mean, it was very visible to the tourists. But, yeah, it was – the impact was local. I mean, there were – you know, the local residents were – petrified. They were staying at home. They weren't going anywhere in Jalisco. I will say that I spoke to my friends in Mexico City, and they weren't really, they know that it was going on, but they were somewhat concerned, but nothing happened in Mexico City. So this was really good day too.
Was there a big spike that's calmed down, or
yes,
is this ongoing still?
No, it's calmed down. It's calmed down.
Okay.
Yes. But the one thing is people were mentioning to me, this was not — look, the current president, the party itself, the entire party, a lot of talk has gone over the years how they have this uneasy alliance with the cartels in some way. Okay? So to them, going against them isn't exactly in their best interests. Okay? Because this was really forced upon them by the United States, which is why the reaction by them was so visible and violent right away. I think more as a warning to the president that, you know, they could really, that they don't have control of the country, that they can control the country if they want. And that's, I think, the biggest signal that they wanted to send. And I also find that the way that the administration wanted to do this, it seemed really like, once again, we were targeting an execution instead of like actually capturing, as we have done with others in the past. They just wanted them killed.
Right.
They didn't want to capture.
Well, and also I think this is just the fact that there was this backlash. I just can't view it any other way that this is just another example of where they don't think ahead.
No!
They only think of the very next action they want to take.
And what the repercussions or what the long-term strategy is and
There is nothing long-term. I mean, for years, people were talking about how, hey, it's not really that they're stupid. They're playing five-dimensional chess. They're thinking so many steps ahead. And they're, no. None of that. They are, at best, thinking about the very next step they want to take.
Yeah.
And figuring they'll deal with what happens after.
Yeah.
You know, there's no —
well, they don't think — no, it's not even — they don't even think there's going to be an after. They don't even get there.
They're just, oh, we're going to win.
Yes.
That's it. We're going to get what we want. We're going to win. That's the whole story. And part of this is also just this complete disdain for expertise as well. Like, do you think anybody in the Trump administration consulted with people who actually had extensive local knowledge of what was going on in either Iran or Mexico or Venezuela?
Come on.
Or Ukraine, for that matter?
Well,
no.
Not that he would listen or consider it, you know, because, I mean, Marco Rubio, even though he is a complete dickhead and sellout, is not dumb, so he does understand a lot of the repercussions of these things, okay, and probably things further, but it's not like, and he knows
but no
that,
one gives a
nobody
shit.
Gives, exactly. It's not like anybody gives a shit about that, so he's not going to be, you know, doing that. He's just playing his game. That's it. So, It's
fun.
Oh, so, yeah, fun. More fun. Fun in Mexico. So, fun in the Middle East. I got a friend of mine who's told me that, that their son was traveling, with a group that was about to travel through Doha today, and that all their flights got canceled, and they got stuck in Africa right now because of this, because all air traffic right now is stopped. You know, through.
So let me ask, given the current state, is now the perfect time to finally get around to my random trip to the southern Yucatan?
Actually, right next to the Belize border. It's
the other side of the country from where
it's a very big country.
But...
Yeah, I would say, well, maybe not the perfect time, but I don't think that if you went, there would be
not talking about Cozumel or either. We're talking about a fairly rural area near the Belize border.
But it's near the Belize border. There's nothing going on over there. You should be fine.
Okay. So after you visit Seattle, we'll just get on a plane and go straight there.
Okay, you got to tell
get
my
this
wife.
Taken,
okay,
get
you
gotta, this out of the
okay,
way.
Okay, you got to tell my wife about this.
You can dump your wife at that retreat and we can go.
That's what we're going to do. We dump her into the retreat and we just fucking like, what are we, charter a jet? How are we doing this? Oh, yeah.
Drive.
I am grabbing a rental car. So basically, okay, so this is the thing. You get in the car with me. We drop her off at Long Beach. And then we go for the border in a rental car. Drive all the way to Yucatan.
Yes.
And then we try to make it back in 5 days. Basically, I had to go do that round trip in 5 days. So then I can pick her up. We get back to Seattle. We take our flight and we go home.
There you go. Perfect.
I am tempted by this idea. Okay. I'm not going to lie. Okay. All right.
Now, to get to the Yucatan by car,
we can
from
do
here.
It's not a problem. We could drive.
Would we have to go through some more dangerous areas than Yucatan?
Not really. There's some, you know, Mexico has major highways. We could make it. We make it probably pretty close to where the hell we gotta go through the highways. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not that big a deal.
There you go.
I may have.
Okay, we have a plan.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so let me see. Long Beach, Washington. Okay, great. Let me see directions to. Okay, from now. No,
you
no.
gotta get the actual name of the town. Hold on.
Give me the name of the town. Hold on, so I can see the driving directions. Hang on.
It is Chachoben. C H A C C H O B E N.
Wait. Slow
in
down.
Quintana Roo, Mexico.
Say C H O B.
Chachoben.
Okay. Man, this is tough to pronounce. Chachoben. Okay, here we go. All right, let's see. Come on, give me the driving directions. 2 days and 10 hours. 3,619 miles. Tolls required. But
yeah,
I'll tell you what, it's a pretty straight shot through highways all the way there. From
there you go.
Up there but I got straight out directions. We gotta go. Actually, we'll go through. Yeah, because we'll go through very close to where my brother lives in Texas. Okay, cross the border through Monterrey, Mexico, which is one of the other big cities in Mexico. Go Victoria, Tampico, Veracruz, Villahermosa, and then we get all the way there. Very close to
There you go.
It's actually doable.
Well, that's 2.5 days of straight driving.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. 8 hour shifts.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
Trade
yeah.
Off
basically.
Every 8 hours.
Yeah. We basically. Yeah. Let's see.
No stops on the way. Just straight.
I mean, it's basically. Yeah. This is a mad dash all the way down there. Basically. Yes.
And then all the way back.
Yeah.
Okay, enough of that.
All right.
Anything else on Mexico?
Not at the moment, no.
Are there any other topics you want to make sure to cover before we close things up. I know we're still a little bit short of our normal time, but
there was one thing, and I posted a news, but I didn't put it in topics. Sam?
Yeah.
Guess what about inflation?
What?
Do you know what was
about
reported?
Inflation?
Yeah. Do you know what was reported earlier this week about inflation?
Well, I remember one of you guys posting a link about Boebert trying to define inflation.
Well, yes. How did she do? Did you watch it?
She said, I think she said it was with when prices were bad because of Biden.
Something along those lines. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, now what is it? Was it revisions in the bad direction or something like that? What was the actual news?
The producer price index was announced this week. Okay, and it showed that hotter than expected increases 0.5 for the month, and that the annual inflation rate was at 2.9% for producer prices. So think about this. The prices that manufacturers that eventually have to pass on to consumers. Okay.
Okay.
So their prices are up and it's hotter than expected. And also there were revisions to earlier months that showed that it was hotter than expected, Sam. Take a look at that.
Okay. Interesting. I thought all economic indicators were going well.
Yeah. And inflation was down, under control.
Yes. Inflation is down. Jobs are good. Housing is good.
Yep.
Everything's operating on all cylinders. Everything's going
great.
And
by the way, in terms of goods, it was down, but simply because it was impacted by energy prices, which are down. Okay. Some energy prices are down. But that's, you know, energy prices are very volatile, up and down, whatever. So it's, you know, there was a 5.5% decrease in gasoline prices. But, you know, but that's
bottom line, Yvonne, your prediction is still the economy is going to hell before it gets better again.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, there's just no, all the economic indicators suck, except the ones that Trump can manipulate.
Right. Okay, one update. While we've been talking here the last few minutes, Bob shared on our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack an update. Netanyahu's apparently been on Israeli TV claiming that they did, in fact, get Ayatollah Khamenei. I always forget and do the earlier name. But the supreme leader of Iran, Netanyahu, is saying all indications show he's no longer with us. Now, a couple hours ago, I was hearing that he was scheduled to give an address to the Iranian people. I guess maybe he hasn't yet. Again, fog of war. By the time you listen to this, you'll know more. But maybe they got the supreme leader, which is one of the scenarios I mentioned that would result in more substantial changes than just, hey, let's bomb them for a few days and then things continue on exactly as they were. If they actually got the supreme leader and a few other, you know, top five, top 10 people in Iran, that's going to lead to some volatility because who the hell knows what comes next.
I'm sure this will be fine. This will all break out in Jeffersonian democracy tomorrow. There's going to be like this entire like just, you know, I'm talking about it more in terms of like the myths where it will just all be.
It'll all be like wonderful roses.
And happy roses on the streets and happiness and hugs and yeah.
Well, the one thing I will say about Iran along the lines of is that actually possible is that the younger population, which is a significant majority at this point, has been over the last couple of years getting increasingly vocal and agitated about wanting an opening of society, wanting real democracy, wanting that change. There were massive demonstrations in Iran just a month or two ago that were put down like they usually did. But if they are given an opportunity by a decapitation of the leadership, there is a non-zero chance that just like the revolution in the 70s that, you know, caused the hostage crisis and everything else, the Iranian youth actually do take over the country. It's not impossible.
It could turn out good. For whom?
Well, it could be a net positive for the Iranian people.
It's possible.
I'm not predicting that, but I'm saying it is within the realm of possibility that the Israelis and U.S. decapitate the Iranian government, and that Iranian reformers take advantage of
outcome. But it's possible. But it's one of those things that, again, it happens by accident, not necessarily by any plan, because I'm sure that we didn't lay any groundwork in order to be able to support that.
Right. It's kind of like if you remember the Kurds in Iraq during the first George Bush administration.
Right.
Where we gave a lot of noise about, like, you know, hey, we're liberating Kuwait. Now's your time. You may want to rebel too. It would be a good time. And they did. And we backed them up with zero.
Right.
And they ended up getting crushed.
We let them get slaughtered. Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's another possible outcome here.
Yep.
But the key is, and I think this is a standard of Donald Trump and his administration as well. And it's, frankly, it's a reason why a lot of people like him, is he's willing to take huge bets where there may be a massive downside possibility, but there's also a massive upside possibility.
Yeah,
and he's just willing to roll the dice.
He basically, it's not even a roll of the dice, Sam. It's like putting all your money on one number on the roulette table, okay? You know, there's 40 fucking numbers. The likelihood that you will succeed is stupidly low. This isn't a grand plan. If it happens, it's just pure luck. It's dumb luck. Dumb luck, period. End of story.
Unfortunately, this man has had a lot of pure dumb luck. And had things that should have landed him in jail decades ago. And still, instead, he's president of the fucking United States for the second time.
Ah, for the love of fucking God. Yeah. Okay. So on that note, shit. Okay. Fuck me. Yeah. Shit. Yeah. You're right. Son of a bitch.
Anyway. Yeah. Let's close it up.
Yeah, let's close it up.
Okay, everybody. You know, I almost said electiongraphs.com, but there's nothing happening there yet. Soon, we'll set up for 2028. But curmudgeons-corner.com, you can go there. You can find all our old shows, transcripts, all the ways to contact us, all that kind of fun stuff. And of course, you can find our Patreon. So you can give us money at various levels. We'll mention you on the show. We'll ring a bell. We'll send you a postcard. We'll send you a mug. All that kind of fun stuff. At $2 a month or more, or if you just ask us, we will invite you to the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and all kinds of other folks are chatting throughout the week, sharing links, talking about the news, talking about other stuff. And we would love to have you. The more, the merrier. So Yvonne, what's a highlight from the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack that we have not mentioned on the show yet?
Okay, I will mention this. I shared this on a random channel, and this is something that I dearly love. And there is this article about the title is Inside the Cutthroat Competition for the Best Baguette in Paris. Okay. Bread yes. is God in Paris. Enter the Baguette Grand Prix. There is this entire competition where all the bakeries in France go and, like, submit these baguettes to be judged for the best baguette in Paris, okay? And there is this entire process of evaluating, looking at them, tasting them, judging them in order to arrive at the best baguette. And my fucking God, I would give anything to be a judge on this fucking competition, because I sure fucking love a baguette. Oh, my God. It's my favorite.
There you go.
It's just, oh, this is, it, you got to look at the picture. It's just so, it looks so delicious.
Do you eat it straight or with butter or with some other topping? How do you consume
it? Butter is my preferred, obviously, yes. You know, with a okay. nice, just, you know, a nice baguette warm with just a little bit of butter. You know, it's just excellent. There is this French butter brand that I like. That's just, it's so expensive, which is why I don't normally buy it, but it's so good whenever I get it. Oh my gosh. It's just
now you have me wanting one of these.
Oh my God. It's
or at least some kind of breakfast.
It's glorious, man. I'm telling you. It's I gotta find the brand of the butter. There is this, I will tell you that out of all my butters and near my top are the European butter is usually like Lurpak or Irish butter. Those are really good. But there is this one specific butter that I'm pulling up the name, like over here, which is it's not easy to find. Okay, and it's also stupidly expensive, which is why I will admit that it's just so expensive that I you can't have this on a regular butter. Basis. It's called échiré, okay?
And you don't want to waste it on like normal crappy bread.
It's échiré. It's from France. It's just if last time I looked it up, it was just so stupidly expensive. It's absolutely delicious. One little container of échiré, okay, all right, a little container is $16, okay?
Okay.
If you buy, I see where they sell it, like, in a package, okay? If you get, like, you know how you would get, like, 4 bricks of butter for, like, $10, $15, $20 right. at Costco? The same amount for this, $240.
Yeah, okay.
This is why I don't buy this butter. I'm not going to, I mean, just,
I'll stick with some Land O'Lakes or something, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, and the problem is that yeah, you want to because you'll try it and then you'll be like,
Brandy occasionally gets some, and Brandy occasionally gets some fancy Irish butter.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, I'll be honest, I can barely tell the difference, but I can recognize it's a little bit better. But you know, I can see occasionally
something. This one is stupid. It's over and above the norm of how good it is. Okay, all right. It's just stupidly good. I gotta try to see if I find a place that has it cheaper than like at that. But almost all the places that I've seen it, when I've gone to buy it, it's been like, oh, it's $80. Oh, it's $200. I'm like, oh, fuck me. No. I can't start eating, you know, butter that costs, you know, $80. Like, you know, for just for just something that costs like $15 on the other one. It seems like on a daily basis, it seems extravagant.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can see splurging every once in a while as a treat, but that's different than making this your everyday butter.
Yeah, no, it's too much. No. So.
Okay, one last thing. I'm going to do my Robin Letter promo again. Just as stats for everybody, we're up to 37 users at the moment who have made, where's my number here? 47 updates so far between those 37 users across 7 Robins. The whole idea is an alternative.
You mentioned on the Slack.
Yes.
My thing about creating a pitch deck to sell it was only half in jest. It's not completely. I did it first kind of like jokingly, but I realized later, maybe this isn't a complete joke. After I started putting everything together. So we need to discuss this at some point. Maybe not as much money as I put in there, but then I thought about it.
Yvonne's joking about getting us $50 million in funding
for this
thing.
But here's the thing, Sam. Look at all the stupid shit that's gotten a lot more money than this. And it's a lot dumber and more expensive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as I said on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack about, no, I didn't say it on the Slack. I said it in one of the Robins.
Ah, yes.
You know, There are potential issues with venture funding and how it matches and expectations, and maybe there are ways to get money organically, but I don't know. I'm willing to talk. If anybody wants to like buy me out for a few million dollars, I'd have to at least think about it, you know? But anyway, it's actually a lot of fun, and people have been, it varies Robin to Robin. Like I have one that I tried to start up for like people I knew from the Seattle area that's starting very, very slowly. Only a couple of people have accepted their invitations, even after I solicited and said, would you be willing to do this? And they said, yeah, sign me up. And then they haven't actually followed up. So that one's going really slowly. But like the one for the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack has, with a bunch of people who are on our Slack, people have been giving like heartfelt updates about their lives. And for the ones that I've started with my cousins on the two sides of my family, they're real updates from people where they've written about what's going on with them and their kids and stuff. And so it's actually doing its intended purpose, you know, but it's still all people I know. So we need to get past that. And I need to build out a couple more features before it's like really fully baked, I would say. Like it's got most of the key functionality, but like I know there's some things missing. You need to be able to upload pictures. People want to do that. You need to be able to comment on posts when it's not your turn. The more I've actually played with this, the more I've wanted to do that myself. So, you know, I've got work to do, But yeah, I don't know. We'll talk, Yvonne. We'll talk, Yvonne. Maybe we can do something. But anyway,
my whole thing is, look, why not take a stab at it? You have a product. I think there's some potential. Okay. So I think we need to seriously discuss.
Okay. Like we said we were going to talk last week and then we didn't. We'll make sure it happens this week.
Well, I was very busy, almost getting killed and shit, okay? You know?
Well, it was also me. Like I said, let's talk about it tomorrow or whatever.
I'm sure it's on your task list, so it will at some point, yeah. Like maybe
at some point I'll randomly pick talk to Yvonne and then I'll text you and you will have gotten run over by a motorcycle and you won't be available. So
yeah, that could be a problem.
Anyway, my point was, I got 37 users now. I want more. So if you are listening to this and you have not yet been invited and actually joined one of these Robins. Oh, and by the way, there are still how many people who have not accepted? I still have 20 open invites from invites that have gone out, but the people haven't accepted yet, in addition to the 37 that are already online. So if you are interested at all, willing at all, even if you're not super interested, if you're willing to give it a shot, contact me, feedback@robinletter.com, and I'll get you an invite. Anyway, and then you can go from there. That's it. I am done for real now. Thanks everybody for joining us yet again. And after Yvonne talked about all that bread, I think I need to go find some breakfast soon. Nice. I'm hungry. I'm also tired because I mentioned I woke up just before the show, but I'd only been asleep like 2.5 hours.
Nice.
At that point, because I was doing some stuff. Like I don't want to get into the whole story, but we replaced our projector that we use in our living room. The old one died. Got a new one. I installed it, mounted it on the ceiling. Alex helped me mount it at first, but we had some problems. So like. At like 1 a.m, I realized I had to fix some shit because the way we'd done it the first time was not going to stay. Okay.
It's kind of like the fucking scale that you know, you guys are not experts at hanging anything on the fucking ceiling is what I'm realizing.
We haven't told that story on the thing. My son bought a hanging scale to weigh the dog and mounted it from the ceiling and stuff like that. Anyway.
Yeah, apparently on the first attempt, apparently, you know, I'm like, I stupidly asked what he said. Oh, wow, he found the stud on the first try. That's amazing. And then Sam was like, no, he actually didn't. And it came crashing down. Oh, of course.
He found it on the second try.
Of course.
I asked him when I first came upstairs, I'm like, you remembered to put that in a stud, right? And he's like,
stud? Huh? He's like, stud?
And then so he tried it, and it of course came out. Like, it wasn't like a big crash and burn type thing.
It just slid out. Yeah. Well, thank God it wasn't more damage. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. And so he put it back up and he did it the right way. And then when we mounted the projector, it was in fact a similar issue. And then I, at like 1:30 in the morning, I'm like, okay, we're going to fix this. And he was tired. He fell asleep, but I kept working on it. I remounted everything properly. I had to readjust how some of the wiring was because it wasn't exactly in the same position as the old one. And there was one screw that in the mounting hardware that got broken in the process, and I had to figure out a way to make it all work anyway. Anyway, and by the way, while all this was going on, we were going to war. And so even once it got all mounted, I turned on my 4UP news channels and sat there watching news for a couple more hours. And yeah, so I've had less than 3 hours sleep. So I have competing impulses in me right now. I am hungry and I am tired. So, and Alex is still asleep. So the question is, do I get food or do I take a nap or do I actually try to do something productive? Or some combination of the three. Like I could drive somewhere to get food and on the way sleep in the car. And then shove food into my mouth while I'm asleep as well and choke on it. Does that sound like a plan?
Perfect.
And I've got Robin Letter work to do. I rolled Robin Letter, more stuff on Robin Letter. I'm fixing some bugs right now. I have a list of bugs and things to look at before I go adding new features. So I got to do that too. And other stuff that needs to be done. So anyway, I was saying goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody. Have a great week. Stay safe. Have fun. Blah, 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 blah. And we'll talk again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, that's it. Hit and stop, Yvonne. Have a good rest of your weekend.
Bye.
Bye.